When your ideal customer's kids are begging every night to read your book, you've won. At Dinosaur House, we turn industry leaders into kids' book authors. We don't do it because it's a super fun thing to do, although it is. We do it because it's highly strategic. Imagine if every night your customers are being asked by their kids to read a book that your company made. Talk about brand affinity. You're helping your customers connect deeply with the most important thing in their lives, their kids, over something that they are passionate about that has to do with your industry. If you want to have a conversation with us about how your brand could become the author of a kid's book, just hit us up, dinosaurhouse.com. Hit the little button that says schedule a story design call. And we'll have a jam session together on just what your company's kids book could and should be.
Hey, what's going on? My name is Jeremy Hamill. I'm the founder and CEO at Wednesday. And at Wednesday, it's a company based on a really simple idea that people join people. But yet online recruiting and companies, they don't really showcase their people. You don't really get a good look at who you might be able to work with if you're a candidate. So we enable that. We enable that through a SaaS software product. So and you're listening to the Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur.
What's up, Purpose-Driven Entrepreneurs? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Jeremy. Jeremy, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be here.
So I'm excited to talk to you, Jeremy, but before we get into most of what I want to talk about, I would love if you could give us some context on how your business works. So just in a nutshell, what is it that you sell to who? And how did you start it?
Sure. Yeah. So we sell SaaS products. So it's software as a service to kind of medium and large companies. These are going to be companies kind of on the smaller end. They may have a few hundred employees, but generally you're going to have a few thousand up to tens of thousands of employees. And what we do is we enable them to interview their employees in a scalable way using our tool, capture kind of what we like to call authentic employee perspective, authentic employee content, and then use that to kind of tell their story to their talent market out in the world.
Awesome. How did you end up starting this company and what's the growth been like?
Sure. So Wednesday is my third company in this space. I was the head of product at a company called Culture IQ almost a decade ago now, which was helping companies to measure and understand their organizational culture. And that kind of got me on this rabbit hole of organizational development and HR tech, which, you know, you say HR tech and it kind of sounds, well, certainly it's not like the sexiest industry to be working in. But what I found is it's really wildly fascinating to think about how groups of people kind of come together, how they organize themselves and how they can get better and better at that over time, especially when, you know, wild things happen like COVID over the last year that forces companies to go remote or just drastically change kind of how they're operating. So I was the head of product at Culture IQ. I started a company after that that's now a Series B company called Hone in the manager training and development space. And the deeper I've gone into this direction of trying to understand how companies develop their talent, meet talent, work with talent, organize their talent, the more that's just like the direction I've become really interested in. And it kind of like tickles my brain. So Wednesday is a continuation of that in a direction that I think we all acknowledge is pretty broken, which is recruiting and talent acquisition. But there haven't been really like awesome solutions that have been step changes in how companies can run talent acquisition and kind of think about their employer brand yet.
When did you figure out what the core product was going to be for Wednesday? Like what made you think of what you ended up creating?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't so much conceive of the product ourselves as we did like run a, you know, a pretty rigorous set of customer and market interviews. And we actually originally were considering a concept around apprenticeship programs with the idea being like, can you get, you know, talent that might come from non-traditional places or non-traditional backgrounds, doesn't have like the classic college degree. Can you enable companies to build apprenticeship programs to like give them pathways into their early careers? And we just started talking to as many people in our network and networking to HR leaders and talent leaders to try to see if this was something they're interested in. And like broad strokes, the answer is yes, but it's very, very complicated. The more we peeled back, the more complex it seemed. And one little piece of what we had in there was this idea of like, oh, let's introduce the team that's hiring the apprentice to the apprentices themselves. And while the whole rest of the concept, like we just got a lot of varied feedback on, it seemed like it was going to be really, really hard to take the first few steps to actually building the business. That little piece of it was clearly very exciting. And so we did kind of the classic startup thing, and we cut out 90% of what we were working on and just focused on the one piece that people seemed excited about. And I think that really also for us, like, once we got there and we realized there was something there, it unlocked for us like how much potential is kind of on the other side of that. And so we got really excited about it, but it was very much market driven and, you know, just us talking to people we wanted to sell to and see kind of how they were thinking about what their problems are that they're facing day to day.
Yeah. One of the questions I always like to ask is, what's one of the hardest problems you've had to solve within your business? So, you know, this could be a problem around designing the product, or it could be a problem around getting customers or what, but what jumps out to you when you think about that?
Yeah, sure. So like, I mean, the way that I think about the challenges early on is that you just don't have momentum, and that you can really kind of like consider that in a bunch of different directions. And so I think early on, you want a lot of these kind of self-enabling loops for a company. So like the more customers you have, the easier it is to get more customers. And the more case studies you have of it working, the easier it is to point to those. And get more customers. And like, but in order to do that, you have to have people using your product. You gotta get product cycles. But in order to get product cycles, for us especially, we're not a freemium product that anyone can just go to our website and sign up. We got to sell the product. So there's all of these kind of like interrelated knots that you kind of have to untangle in order to get the product cycles that you're looking for, or just not even the product cycles, like the general cycles, business cycles, product cycles. It's really learning cycles at the end of it in order to learn what you even need to do. And so early on, the hard part for me, and this is now my third time doing this, is always you just don't have enough learning cycles yet. So it's just like learning any new skill. You're like not very good at it until you've practiced, you've gotten some reps, but those first few reps are really hard. Like we call it internally chopping wood. Like ultimately we're trying to build an engine and we want it to be a super high efficiency engine. Like we want to be a Tesla, you know, like we want to be a cool, like a really high efficiency engine. But right now we're very far from that. We're chopping wood. So like, it's very manual. It's very much like every single thing we're doing, we're having to do, there's not a lot of scaling going on. Like it's a lot of work each time, but the big challenge is like, let's get those learning cycles, the velocity of those learning cycles faster, which will allow us to know what to do to build the engine. It's kind of the way to think about it.
Yeah. What year did you start the business?
So we started the predecessor to the business. So my son was born January, 2020. Business was, I closed my pre-seed round that same month. And then we got started, and then like we were in New York at the time, March of 2020, COVID hit. And so we had a really weird first kind of year and a half, and pivoted into this direction that we're in just about a year ago, a little bit less.
Got it. What's been your primary way of getting customers, and how has that evolved over time?
Sure. So, I mean, a lot of it, like, it's just chopping wood. I mean, it's networking. It's like, who do I know? Who can they introduce me to? Those are the first few customers. Like I like to try to be as best as possible kind of like intellectually honest about the signals we're getting from the market. And if you're selling to people, you know, that's a really not a clean signal. And so we really early on are trying to run a more systematic kind of like SaaS sales product process. So we have an AE, we have two BDRs, we're running kind of an account-based approach for outreach. We're segmenting it by vertical so that we can kind of like identify where is the most need. So we're trying to be pretty rigorous around running a system that's maybe a little mature for our stage. And that's for kind of us to learn and to build. But in terms of our early customers, a lot of them are coming from our early network. And that's just kind of like, I think, how it usually gets started.
Do you have any general thoughts around running a business, like you said, that's like further along than like you're running it like it's further along than where it is? Or, you know, do you feel like you've hired more than what a typical SaaS company would have hired at your stage? Or what do you mean exactly when you say that?
No, I think we the inverse, probably. I've never been the type of founder that like actually, like there's been, you know, now it's August 2022 right now, or at least when we're recording this, and like there's been a huge market correction for, you know, startups and tech companies. Yeah. We were all like, I feel like it's corrected towards how I was operating anyway. Like we were never like, we're just going to burn through all this cash. That seems insane to me. I know that's kind of like the goal. Like my perspective is that early on, we're like explorers. We're in search of the inflection point, and we got to go find that inflection point. And like, we might be really close, but just adjacent to it. And then you're going to get like some linear growth and not the exponential growth you're looking for. So like a lot of what the way I think about it is like, got to just keep surviving and keep trying things and learning as fast as we can until we kind of land pay dirt, you know, like we see where the inflection point is. So right now we're seeing early signs much more so. I mean, we've been, you know, for almost two and a half years trying to like find our footing and burning as little as we can possibly burn, like making sure we don't go out of business, making sure we're learning fast, like keeping our investors as best as possible, like confident that we're testing and we're learning and we're doing the right things, even if we haven't found like the inflection point in terms of growth and business yet. And I think more recently we're starting to see that, which is why what gave me the confidence to say, okay, let's actually go out and build the first kind of like unit of a sales team, which is just a single AE and two BDRs. And let's see if we can now kind of like run that process. But we're just trying to lay the foundation. Like, I'm not trying to scale the thing before we've just done the thing. I'm perfectly happy to do things manually, and we're a small team for our size, and our burn is very low relative to what we've raised. And that's just kind of how I want to build, because I want to reserve the capital so that when we find the inflection point, we've got fuel to pour on it.
Yeah. Is that how you've always thought? Or like, you're a serial entrepreneur, so has your thinking evolved in that way? Or is this how you've always done things?
Yeah. I mean, I've gone through, what is it? Is it Dunning-Kruger? I don't know. There's like this curve of like, you know, before you when you're really early in something, you're kind of like overconfident, and then you realize how complex it is, and you kind of get like underconfident almost. And then you slowly build up your confidence. And I think that's more or less what happened to me. Like when I think back about, you know, when I was in early 20s and was running, I had a big role at Culture IQ, which was this, you know, at the time, this New York based kind of venture backed company. And I very much was in my head. I was like, we're swinging for the fences here. Like if we're not, you know, rocket shipping, we're not doing it right. And I think I was just very naive, and I really didn't realize like how hard these things are to build, and how much like you can't run before you can walk. Like you literally have to go step by step, or it'll just break. Unless you have like crazy, crazy product market fit, and the market's just sucking it out of you, which is like, those are the ones you hear about, but like, that's not 99.9% of companies. This is not most companies is that that's the case. So like, I think I started out really confident, like, okay, we're going to figure it out. So like burn, hire the people, like, let's go. And then I kind of went the far end of the other spectrum, which is like, I almost got like gun shy. I don't know if I like that term, but like, I just got a little, I was like nervous, you know, I got like a little, I was like nervous, to overinvest, because I learned that it doesn't always work out how you think it's going to work out. And now I think I've kind of found my equilibrium. I'm like, you know, a little bit deeper in, which is, these are levers, and you just got to like learn how to play the instrument almost, you know, like and sometimes you got to turn the volume up and sometimes you got to turn the volume down. And last 2.5 years, like I have my pilot's license. I haven't flown in a really long time, but I have my pilot's license from I got when I was like I was like a teenager. And like, I feel like I've been flying the plane as slow as I could possibly fly it without stalling and crashing. And that's been kind of the game for a long time. And now the game is like, all right, we got some fuel. I see where we're going. So let's like hit the throttle a little more.
Nice. Awesome. I love it. So Jeremy, I started this podcast because I wanted to ask purpose-driven entrepreneurs what they're really living their life for. When you think about a big question like, what are you living your life for? What do you want to be remembered for when you die, or anything like that, both personally and also as an entrepreneur, what jumps out to you as most important?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a huge question. So
I said I was going to ask you your big why. So there it is.
You did tell me that. So like, I wish I could say I was more intentional about all of this.
I was pre-pandemic. Yeah. I would have had no idea how to answer this question that I just asked.
Yeah.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think back and like, I've just always been starting things and trying things. Like you go all the way back. I started my first, I mean, I started a subscription business when I was like 11 years old in my neighborhood in Miami, taking people's garbage cans in and out of their side yards on garbage day. And I charged them like $20 a month.
Okay, I'm trying to teach kids to do that actual business. Like I'm like telling kids, like, you don't realize this, but there's grownups all over this neighborhood that would pay you just to bring your trash back and forth on trash day.
Yeah, like, I mean, 50, you know what, almost 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago now, my gosh. I was charging $20 a month to do it. And I had 30 or 40 houses in my neighborhood that signed up. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, my bike did get stolen, so it was a wash in the end, but like the experience was great.
So you were just going around on your bicycle and people were paying you a subscription of 20. Did you try to do, so this is another thing that I've been thinking about, is like getting kids to like think about pricing packages or like tiered pricing.
Oh no, so that like, was beyond my level of sophistication at the time. No, this was pretty simple.
I'm like, you know, some people, they're willing to pay $50 a month if you also wash their trash can.
Totally. Yeah, I love it. I wasn't there yet, but I did. So I did that. I started an after school kickball thing at my parents growing up. They owned a preschool. That was my family business. And I'd always seen my parents kind of like, there's something about growing up in a family where there's a single small family business that is your, you know, it's like that's what's sustaining you as a family. And my parents were so proud of the preschool they owned and put so much energy and effort into making it really the best that they could make it in terms of the curriculum, the programming, the facilities, like all of it. And I think it gave me an appreciation for entrepreneurship at a really young age, an appreciation for my parents at a really young age. And like, also, I witnessed them like have a lot of freedom and have a lot of like, now this wasn't a big business, it was a small business. It wasn't like we were very, very kind of like, in the middle in terms of like, you know, income and all those things. And I think that like, but they had freedom, they could make their decisions, they could be creatively, like they could kind of creatively follow their interest. And so I just naturally, like, I know personally for myself, when I think about myself, I value freedom immensely. And like the path to freedom in our world right now, part of it is like financial independence. And like, when I look at those two things together, and it's like, where can I have the most freedom? Where can I kind of unlock the highest likelihood of financial independence? And then as I've gotten older and I've had kids and I have a family, like, it's hard to overstate the impact of having kids on your purpose in life. Like I just want to give them whatever I can give them. And I think those things, you know, those are loose. It's not a really tight answer, but like, that's kind of, I think, maybe some of the drivers there.
Do you think, are you going to try to teach your kids to be entrepreneurs, and why or why not?
Oh, without a doubt. Because it's the same reason that I think I'll try and go on real long hikes with them, or try and like teach them strategy games. Like there are fundamental life skills that can be derived from anything, and especially from entrepreneurship, that I think are just so valuable that it would be crazy, even if they had no interest in entrepreneurship, just learning how our world works from the context of business. Like, my goodness, how powerful a skill is that? Like, that to me, when people, you know, people talk about privilege, like that's the type of privilege that I think is like very hard hitting, because like, that's what a privilege for them, for me to be able to care about it as much that I, you know, where I want to spend the time and energy doing it. And I do. And so like, that's what I, you know, that's what I care about. That's what I want to give them. And I think it's important regardless of their path in life.
Yeah, agreed. Well, no surprise. I think as a kids book author, I think part of leaving a legacy means reaching kids. Just for fun, I have two for fun questions for you. This is my first one. What is something that you would make a kids book about if you could? Like, what's a topic or an idea that you would want your kids to grasp?
Mm. Wow.
Your oldest is like 2.5, right?
2.5, yeah.
Two and a half.
So I'm kind of considering for him, like,
another way to think about it, this is something my dad used to say. He'd be like, if you'll just get this, it'll change the trajectory of your life. So like, when you think about like an idea that you're like, if they just understand this, it will change the course of their life.
Sure. You know, like this is going to be a real tough one to try to distill, but like this concept I've talked with, you know, my wife and I've talked about a lot is like this idea of holding two things at once, that two things can be true at the same time. And like, that like new, like almost trying to like get nuance to be something that kids can understand at an earlier age. Like we just live, there's so much black and white in the world right now in terms of like, I mean, the way people believe they see the world being the right way and their belief system being right, versus kind of like an acceptance that many things can be right at the same time. And there's various shades of things. And like, you can hold things, you know, mutually inclusive things are maybe as worthwhile to understand as mutually exclusive. And like, I mean, wow, I don't know where I would begin to try to distill that concept for a 2.5 or a 3-year-old, but like that idea.
Love that.
You know, that could be pretty powerful, I think.
No one's given me an answer like that before, but I really love that. You're right. Like getting kids to understand the idea of nuance and that things that seem to contradict each other can both have merit. That's really good.
Yeah.
Last for fun question. What is something you currently suck at that a year from now you want to be great at?
Oh, that's super easy. Well, the second part made it hard. I'm not a very musical person, and it's something I have a lot of friends that are very musically inclined, and I'm always envious of their ability to just like play with each other. And so what I'm trying to do, I want my son to see me learn something from a place of being very bad at it. And so I'm trying to learn the keyboard right now. I'm using this like tool online called Musician, which is like awesome because so it like helps me learn. And like I kind of, you know, I put my son in the room and I'll try and see what songs he wants me to learn. And I'm genuinely really very bad at it. I don't think I'm going to be great in a year, but I think if I stick to it maybe like 3, 5, 10 years down the line, I'll be not as awful as I am right now.
I love it. I love the idea that you'd want your kid to see you go from being really bad at something to learning how to do it. That is so powerful. Jeremy, this has been a really fun interview. Where are you most active that you would want people to connect with you?
Oh yeah, I'm like a super not active online person. You can email me. I don't really do the social stuff. I try to like spend as much time looking at the real world around me as possible. So like,
I was able to find you on LinkedIn. Are you active on LinkedIn no?
I actually, no, I'm not. My team has been getting on me a little bit. Well, you got lucky. It was timing. Like my team, like it was like, I should be, it's kind of important. So I've been doing a little more, but like really primarily like send me an email and I will respond. That's basically it. And so I'm at Jeremy, Jeremy, WednesdayTalent.com. You can check out like a very simple landing page, at WednesdayTalent.com. And, maybe I'll just tell you like, don't spend all your time on a website, like go build your business. And that website is a good example of that, because there's not much there, but there's a lot more behind the scenes than maybe we've spent time on, you know, dressing ourselves up.
I agree. My website doesn't look that great either, but it hasn't stopped me from getting business. So totally. I wholeheartedly agree with that idea. Jeremy, thank you so much. It's been an awesome conversation.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you for having me on today.